Beam community podcast listeners, are you new to virtualization and data protection? If so, check out Backup Academy. Beam has sponsored Backup Academy to provide web-based training and certification resources for virtualization and data protection technologies. We've also launched a new session from Greg Shields, multi-site clustering for Hyper-V disaster recovery. Check out this track and more at backupacademy.com.
Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 56, Server Decisions for Virtualized Environments. Here we go. Today, my guest is Kevin Houston. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm great, Rick. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, I'm glad you could carve the time. Kevin, we had a chance to talk last week when we were both at VMware Partner Exchange in Las Vegas, and it was great. I think that was actually the first time I met you in person. I know that We've been together on both Virtumania, on InfoSmack, Twitter, and you know, back and forth in blogs and stuff. But I think that was my first face-to-face with you.
Probably so. I really don't remember. I've got the memory of a mouse, so we'll just say there was and go with that.
Well, and you know, the scary thing is, and this is, I guess, one of the good things about you know different parts of the IT community today is that that's okay, right? Because you know we've got all these different extra channels to tune in and get to know everybody. So it's kind of good that we have that community and those other resources so that, face-to-face doesn't come first. It's all right. I still know that you're the guy when it comes to next-generation computing platforms, and that's what I want to talk about today. So,
all right.
So, Kevin, can you give everyone a bio of yourself? What do you do? Where are you from? What's your background? That kind of stuff.
Sure thing. I've been in the IT industry for about 15 years. I started off working for some resellers in the Atlanta market where I did a lot of pre-sales work from everything from notebooks to software to software licensing to servers. And over the years, I've been more focused on the x86 market space and really focused on learning more about Blade servers. And that's really where I started to focus on over the past 3 or 4 years. In fact, back in 2009, I created a blog that you may know. It's Blades Made Simple. And the goal of the blog was really just to establish a single point of where customers and people using Blade servers can go to find information about what's current, news about Blade servers, what's going on, the trends. And it's been fairly successful. But I've been around for a little while, back since the days of the Pentium Pro in the server market. So I've seen a lot of trends come and go, and I'm really excited about where the marketplace is headed.
Yeah, and you know, I think that for those of us, myself included, who have been there since the Pentium Pro era, you know, it's kind of amazing when you take a step back. And in fact, I was just talking with someone yesterday. And I was looking at, you know, we were talking about cell phone specs. And we actually concluded that the phone that I put in my pocket is more powerful in terms of RAM, CPU, and disk space than, you know, the first network servers we both administered, you know. So it's kind of scary in that sense when you look at things that way. But when we look at what we're doing today, I think the IT pro today really has the onus on them to make very smart decisions, especially on hardware, on the compute platform for what they buy. And I know, Kevin, you have an extensive background in Blades. And I don't know if you've noticed, but every time we talk, right, when we first talked on Virtumania and then when we talked in InfoSmack, I'm actually getting closer and closer to that Blade, you know, way of thinking. So, what I want to talk to people about today is really, when it comes to virtualized environments, right, you know, that's a consolidated environment. If we're talking about vSphere and Hyper-V, you know, infrastructures, we're really consolidating our server workloads, our app workloads, and really that's an opportunity for us to do the same thing on our hardware, right? So, Kevin, would you agree that, you know, in the loosest of definitions, that Blade servers are a virtualization solution in themselves?
I would, and before we go further, I did neglect to put on the table that I do work for Dell. I'm working at Dell right now. I'm a pre-sales server specialist for Dell.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have a bias toward them, although during my conversation I'll keep it neutral.
Sure.
But I also bring that to the table because I'm not just focused with Blades at Dell. I'm also focused with the rack server. So I do see both sides of the fence. And absolutely, to your point, when Blade servers were originally designed, they were the virtualization of the day from a hardware perspective. It was really saying, hey, let's take all of these big workloads that we have on individual computers scattered across many different racks and individual rack servers and tower servers, and let's consolidate them into a smaller footprint. Let's reduce some of that overhead from a management perspective and cable perspective and things like that. And that's really what we're seeing in virtualization today. We're seeing, you know, that from a, now let's take the physical footprint and reduce it into a software package in the form of a virtual machine. So yeah, I like that approach of saying, you know, Blade servers really were the first virtualization within the x86 marketplace.
Yeah, and it was a little bit easier to go that route, and I think we also saw some other kind of dense computing platforms, right, that might be like two servers in one 2U rack form. You know, we saw some of that kind of stuff. And the hardware can change. In reality, it can actually change pretty quickly. But how we do our software practices, I think now if we're having to convince someone about virtualization, we're probably not going to convince them, but for most of us out there, it's accepted now that virtualization, Hyper-V, VMware, vSphere, that's the way to go. And I think, you know, what I want to kind of ask is, if that's the new standard, or at least, you know, the majority of my new purchases, what kind of things would I need to look out for when it comes to the actual compute platform purchase, right? So, and specifically, how is that different than if I was going to do a standard application server without any virtualization or whatever like that? So at the highest level, can you point me at any big differences specifically if you're going to use virtualization than if you were not?
Yeah, there's really a few different areas of consideration. Beyond when you move to a Blade footprint, obviously you're going to see some reduction in, as I mentioned, management and infrastructure requirements from a cable perspective. But when we just kind of take a step back and say, all right, beyond looking at Blade, when we're just looking at moving from having to do workloads on physical servers versus doing them virtual, you know, some of the obvious things that you have to consider are, you know, what type of memory footprint are you going to need? As you're moving from these physical workloads and stacking them in, obviously you're going to need more physical memory. You're going to need more CPU power.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start to introduce Blades into that mix of, hey, instead of running my physical workloads on physical servers, now I'm running them virtually on Blade servers, some additional considerations that really come into play is around the I/O requirements.
Yeah.
As you're reducing these or combining these workloads and putting them on these virtualization hosts, you are now starting to pile up the I/O requirements, whether it's communication to your storage or whether it's communication to the virtual hosts. That takes a toll, and that is something that has to be sized appropriately. Because you get into, and I'll use VMware or vSphere as a reference, but when you get into that type of environment of running workloads virtually, you start to have to look at, okay, I'm going to have a virtual switch to run my management network and one to run my vMotion network and my virtual machine network. And then if you're running iSCSI, that's another virtual network that has to be considered. When you look at best practices of needing to be redundant, you're going to want a pair of network adapters for each of those.
Yep.
So right there, I've already identified six physical network adapters that are required. On a rack server, that's fairly easy because it comes pre-installed with, you know, two that are embedded, anywhere from 2 to 4 mm-hmm. 1 gig adapters that are embedded, and then you've got anywhere from 2 to 6 PCI Express slots that add additional cards. But when you get into blade servers, you've got anywhere from 2 gigabit NICs embedded. Some have now 10 gig embedded, but then you have to really start to look at what's your expansion. How many additional daughter card or mezzanine slots do those individual blade servers have? Because you may find yourself really limited to the quantity of physical gigabit NICs right. that you can provide to that environment.
Now, don't a lot of the blades, and if it's limited to Dell, that's fine, but you know, that's the blades series I would expect you'd know the best, but you know, are there abilities to give, like, dare I say, virtual interfaces from effectively like an onboard switch to the actual blades, or is that too Star Trek for today?
No, that's definitely becoming more prevalent, and you know, Cisco offers it, IBM offers it, HP offers it, and Dell offers it, where you have the ability on certain network adapters to take a 10 gig pipe and to deliver it to the operating system as a virtual network adapters. So if you were running Windows 2008, for example, you would open up the device manager and you would see 8 different network adapters there, although you only have 2 embedded on the server itself. And so it gives it that ability to say, okay, I'm going to specifically tie this one adapter to being the parent network adapter, or I'm going to use this specific pair of adapters to communicate with the storage network. So it gives the operating system, whether it's Windows 2008 or whether it's vSphere, the ability to segregate the traffic, and it's delivered as if it were individual physical adapters.
Gotcha.
So that is becoming more prevalent today,
yeah,
as I mentioned, across the manufacturers.
And really, I think that's needed, because the more advanced you get with virtualization, and specifically in my case with vSphere, the more I find myself really wanting that separation beyond just the VLAN, okay? And forget, well, I don't want to say forget, but I really come to that realization, not specifically by, like, you know, security concerns and audits and stuff like that, but just speeds and feeds, ease of management, and risk of mishap, really, from the admin. If I can fully separate on different media, you know, management, guest VM, storage, and I gravitate myself to Ethernet-based storage protocols like iSCSI, then I really feel a lot more comfortable, and honestly, things just work better, rather than stacking them all up on top of you know, a pair of NICs with VLANs. That's just my observation. But
yeah, I would agree, and also this technology of being able to carve up the larger 10 gigabit Ethernet pipes and deliver them as gigabit or iSCSI or fiber channel over Ethernet devices is really helping to break down some of those barriers that we've had in the past. Especially in the blade marketplace, of there's not enough I/O slots, or you know, there's not enough we don't have the ability to deliver the number of physical devices that the hypervisor or is needed within the hypervisor,
mm-hmm.
and so this technology of splitting up the larger pipes is really beneficial to the blade marketplace. But personally, you know, I think what really needs to be focused on is that adoption of 10 gigabit Ethernet into the data centers.
Yeah.
You know, that's it's been around for a few years now, and I'm personally just starting to see more of my enterprise customers migrate toward the 10 gig. And it's great, because you look down the street and you can see 40 gig coming.
Yep.
And we're going to soon find ourselves in that position of where 40 gig is starting to become standard, and getting everybody adopted on 10 gig will be the norm.
Yeah, and I think that the big, you know, hurdle for that, right, was that a lot of core infrastructures, you know, depending on when they were implemented in terms of a core Ethernet infrastructure, 10 gig was the backplane for that, right? So then the moment you start putting 10 gig out to AKA clients, or in our case servers, then, you know, then the network people kind of would freak out, like, oh, whoa, I'm handing out, you know, my full bandwidth of the backplane, and that was really the limit there. But as those core infrastructures get updated, I think then, you know, then 10 gig will make its way to the endpoint, and then that's going to repeat itself with 40. And then we're going to be looking back at storage saying, well, now our storage is slow. So,
but you bring up two different areas that are really crucial in that virtualization conversation. You know, I've always been focused on the x86 hardware, the servers, whether they're rack servers or blade servers. But really the conversation starts with the networking guys and moves toward the storage guys, because they've got to make those crucial decisions along with the server guys and the virtualization team, you know, provided they're not all the same people. And it does have to be a collaboration, and you really have to do that architecture and that planning before you start jumping in, because that's the biggest mistake that I've seen when people move to a virtual environment. And hopefully the listeners of the podcast have dabbled in virtualization. But in the event that they haven't, you know, one of the first steps that you really have to do is to have that planning session with all the respective groups and business units within the data center, to make sure that you're all on the same page and you know where you want to be, you know what the end goal is, so that you don't start off dabbling here and then having to reorchestrate and redesign the entire environment because you find out that 10 gigabit or 10 gigs not available, or you have to run fiber, or whatever the case may be.
Well, yeah, and that conversation is, you know, network team, storage team, all the different OS groups, you know, if you've got a Windows team, a Linux team, right? And I think probably the biggest oversight that I've seen, and I'll even admit in my own practice when I was an end user, this is one thing I forgot to do. I made peace with it by doing it later. But you know what? In the case of vSphere, use the permissions model, right? The network team, they may not be the vSphere admin, right? But let me give them the vSphere client, give them permission to look and see whatever the heck they want. What am I doing, right? How are virtual machines connected? How are the hosts, you know, provisioned on the network, right? I'll let them see that. Storage guys, same thing, right? I want them to have that visibility. They may never use it, but the fact that, you know, you're offering that up, that, hey, you can go in and, you know, check out what we're doing, make sure we're not breaking any of your rules, because when things are consolidated and virtualized, we have the potential to do things like in the traditional world of, like, you know, double uplinking, or, you know, putting in a switch in the rack, right, and dual homing a VM, right? Those types of under-the-desk type of things you can do in a vSphere environment, and I think they reserve the right to see what's going on. So one of the best things I did was provision read-only access to the storage and network teams, and that earned a lot of street cred with those groups. So, Kevin, I got another question about, you know, this next-generation computing platform. And, you know, when it comes to blades, one of the things that might be an inhibitor is you know, advanced power requirements. So can you tell me kind of a state of the union of power for blades today? I mean, is it complicated three-phase stuff, or is it the 30-amp twist locks? What do they require?
Well, you're going to find that regardless of the manufacturer, whether it's Dell or HP or Cisco, whomever, The power requirement is one of the biggest things from a blade perspective that you have to put some effort into. You have to have some planning around. You definitely want to use sizing calculators to ensure that the design that you're building around the blade infrastructure, that you have an idea of the power that it's going to require. But the biggest thing is to have the conversation with the data center people. Odds are, If you're building a brand new data center, you're going to have that option to bring in three-phase power, mm-hmm. which is really the preferred power for a highly dense environment like blade server, simply because it's a more efficient power and it really uses less power on the back end because of the way that it's designed, and it's more efficient because. I'm not a power expert by any means, But when you look at three phase, it's really, you've got like the sine waves going up and down. Mm-hmm. And what three phase means is you've got three power circuits running at the same time, so that as the power goes positive, then it goes neutral, then it goes negative. At any one time, you're going to have power fully flowing, where one phase may be in neutral, another phase will be in the positive. So by having those three phases of power together, it's more efficient. It's delivering more power to that device.
Okay, so take that the other way, that if you were doing, you know, what would be, I guess, a little bit more, you know, something that we'd see more would be like the 30-amp twist locks. Those are actually being stepped down, I guess, from their main PDU from like a three-phase source, right?
Yeah, exactly. So in most larger data center environments, you're going to have a three-phase, which is going to get stepped down through the PDU to be a single phase. And so the answer to your question is, it really depends on the design of the data center. You know, if there's three-phase available, then you want to deliver three-phase to the blade infrastructure because it's going to make it more efficient, mm-hmm. and over time going to save you power because of when you have more efficient power, it uses less. When something's not efficient, you're going to use more of it, therefore it's going to cost you more.
Yeah, I guess a simpler example is actually if you plug like one of those surge protectors into the wall, right? And then you, on the surge protector, if you only then plug in, you know, your laptop or something, you're actually drawing more power by that surge protector being there, right? So it's kind of like things in the way actually increase the power draw. So I'm not really a power guy, but I just know that is kind of a cleaner interconnect. So if you're on board with the, you know, the blade technology route, it might be worth the small facility investment to, you know, deliver that power to that endpoint. So that's good to know.
Right, and you know, some of the biggest myths is that blades draw more power, and while that can be the case, I can also show different examples of where blades draw less power than rack servers. But to give you an example back to the three phase, you know, let's say you had 10 2U servers, so total of 16 U's of equipment, and they draw about 1,000 watts each. When you look at doing 120-volt circuits within that specific design with those specific rack servers, and I'm just using rack servers as an example to help us understand the power requirements, you're going to look at needing 6 circuits for redundancy, which are 330-amp circuits, 6 total for redundancy for that solution. When you bump it up to 208 volts, it's dropping down, it's dropping down to only needing 4 circuits for redundancy. But when you move to a three-phase 208-volt circuit, you only need 2 for redundancy for those 10 1,000-watt servers. So really, the more you step it up, the more the power becomes efficient. And bottom line is it's drawing less and requires less circuits from, you know, the primary power source.
Well, hey, Kevin, this has been really good stuff, and I think that there's so much more to, I don't know, maybe I'm not doing my listeners a favor with only a half hour, but my goal is to kind of, you know, drop in little things to get people thinking. And, you know, virtualization is really, really all about the knobs and dials, and I think that extends to the compute platform. So, you know, small decisions that, small details, that, as they may seem, actually can have a big difference. And I think that extends down to the compute platform. So, as you know, Kevin, I've got a gimmick on my podcast, and that's called Three Views from You. So I'm going to ask you three questions, really so the listeners get a chance to know you, the technologist, right? A little bit, you know, maybe stuff you haven't shared in a blog or in Twitter, or, you know, people that know you well may know this. But my first question is going to be set in the past. So, Kevin, as a technologist, what's the most interesting story or experience or technical role that you've had that would be a good story that you could share with us?
Well, I think as a technologist, probably the most interesting thing has been focused around the blog that I have, because what it has done is given me visibility into different business units, different organizations that are using technology, specifically blades, in very unique ways. It's given me the ability to get in, speak with manufacturers, and understand their big picture. So it's really opened the door for me to get a view of the technology world that I never would have, you know, sitting behind a server or, you know, working at a desk. So it's one of those things where it's not specifically a specific story, but you know, I think, you know, just the role that social media has allowed me to see has been very eye-opening.
Well, and I think that you really chose a great path, because there's not too many, you know, subject matter experts I can think of in that realm, yet it's such an important, you know, decision point. So, no, I think that that's turned out really well for you, and I think you're rocking it, so that's great. What's going on today that you have the most passion for technology-wise?
Today, the most passion that I have is around, still around the product of blade servers, but within my job at Dell, I'm very close to the product teams, so I have all this visibility into what's coming, and that really excites me, because you know, I can look and see the future, and I know what customers are going to be able to get in the near future. But the flip side to that is, I know all this information, but I can't tell anybody. That's what stinks.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff that I know that it's going to be hitting the streets, and it's like, I can't tell you.
Tell people the future is good. That's all they need to know.
The future is really good at Dell. And so, but that is what excites me. In this role, you know, I do have that visibility into product teams, and that's what excites me today.
How about into the future? You know, something that you could share, or just a Kevin Houston prediction. You know, what's coming down the road that you are going to have the most personal interest in?
What excites me is, again, and I'm tainted around blade servers, but what excites me is I'm starting to see this merge of technologies, from where we have blade servers, and then we had rack servers, and then we have these modular shared devices where you've got nodes of individual servers sharing chassis. And these have been around for a year or so, but I really see that modular approach that blades really introduce. I think we're going to get more modular in the future. And I did write a blog post about it a few months ago, but I think that we're going to see processing power as an individual node. We're going to see memory as an individual node. And just as a point of reference, this is my personal opinion. It has nothing to do with anything Dell or HP or anybody's working on that I have knowledge of. But I just see that the industry is moving toward having more modular capabilities, where when you need additional memory, boom, you're putting in a memory node that gives you additional memory for your entire infrastructure. So that's what I think, but, you know, hey, I've only been wrong all my life, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, no, I don't think you've been wrong all your life, but no, I think that's good, because really, you know, it kind of follows, you know, the cloud, right? Cloud's elastic.
Yep.
Why does the hardware not need to be elastic, right?
Exactly.
So, no, but you know what? The core components, CPU, network, memory, and disk, they're not going away, right? They're just going to be used different ways, allocated different ways, you know, combined in different ways. So if we can have elastic scale up, scale out, whichever way, it just makes sense. So.
Yeah, and just real quick, in that article that I wrote, my vision is all these modular devices that fit into a 42U rack device, and that rack has its own rack plane, which is the mid-plane where everything docks into. And so you can have storage modules plugging in, and you have memory plugging in, and they all respond at mid-plane speed because they're all part of that 42U rack fabric. That's my vision.
Is this the wide blade servers will be the core of future data centers post?
You got it.
All right. I will put your blog in the podcast notes, Kevin, as well as a link to your Twitter feed at Kevin_Houston. And hey, Kevin, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the Veeam podcast today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.